Hello and thanks for joining us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Rav Michael Lightman. Hello, hello everyone, hello Nitzamazoz. Today we'd like to better understand the world we're living in after the horrific events in Paris and what implications does it have towards Israel. Nitza, please. So a few words about what happened in Paris and France a few days ago. There was a series of terror attacks that ISIS took responsibility for. Gladly, yes, gladly. Terror attacks that France last experienced during World War II, and it shook up Europe and Israel. And even though it was clear that the Islamic terror will burst out someplace, but when it happens in the heart of a European city, which symbolizes the Western culture, it really shook everyone up. And a few days go by, and we see a very interesting phenomena which we'd like to talk to you about. We see that the more the Muslim radical terror is growing in terror, immediately, once people come back to conscience, so to speak, we start getting anti-Semitic, anti-Israel responses. One of the things that really stormed everyone was the words of the Swedish minister, between the comparison she ran between the frustration of the Palestinians, the growing frustration of the Palestinians, and the terror attack in Paris, which shows us in a very negative light. And I wanted to ask you, what is that mechanism? It seems as if there is a kind of a mechanism, like scales, that once the radical terrorism is on a rise, suddenly hatred towards the Jews is on a rise. We don't understand this mechanism. We see that that's how it works, but it's unclear. Why does it work this way? We see a simple phenomenon. If the world feels good, the world is recovering, the world is prospering, then somehow Jews are left to be, and no one pays any special attention to them. This is how it was after the Second World War, about up to 20 years after the Second World War, till the Six Day War, somewhere from 46 till 67. But the world, they were recovering from all the problems and the wars, and there was this thought that there will be no more disputes and everything's going to be fine. But when people went back to their normal life, and they more or less started to move in direction of development, so to speak, suddenly the world discovers that they're not developing. On the contrary, after they've reached a certain standard of living after the war, that more or less people got along and repaired the cities, the working places, more or less, everything in Europe and the U.S., in Japan also, the world started discovering that it's not that they thought that now there will be a ceaseless ascent in the capitalistic, egoistic development, that everyone will be well off and will have freedom of choice and freedom in general, and Europe will be an example for humanity. Instead, the world very quickly found out that they're in a close circle, in an integral world. People started discovering this, first of all, from a kind of inner suppression. like the teenagers or the young adults of the 60s, that we don't want to be like our parents, and we don't want to work till dusk, from dusk till dawn, and take care of our children and live for this purpose. The whole hippie movement, and another war then, and so on, we're not interested. We have to see that all of these things develop as a result of a person's desire developing from generation to generation. It's developing, it becomes broader, a person has wider horizons, he foresees the future, and he doesn't want to live like his parents did. His parents were really happy that they had a job. They went to work in the morning, they came back in the evening, and tomorrow there's also work, and everything's good, and everything's nice. And they were happy about it, that they could continue their life like the previous generation and all previous generations. And suddenly we discover, and I belong to that generation, in 1962, I think, I started university. 63. So, I remember all these things. There was the new culture with the Beatles and everything, meaning that no one wants to work, doesn't want to study, don't want anything, we want freedom. What does it mean, we want freedom? It means that we don't know what is the purpose of life. Answer. Yeah. This is our question. Give us an answer. What is the meaning of our life as human beings? And then we'll arrange our life accordingly, according to the clear goal. They had a clear goal. Their ego is to build families, build homes, and so on and so forth. We're not interested. Our will to receive moved on to the next level, to the next phase. And I remember it very well. How it happened in a few years in such a revolution. In Russia it happened a bit later, but still. There began such states where students took to the streets and didn't exactly know what are we doing and what are we living for and why study. And even though these were the years of the development of the space programs, people went to space, and there was great hope that now we'll fly to different stars and we'll discover things. But still, the world started seeing that it has no purpose. And for the first time in history, people back then started discovering that they need something higher than the normal, ordinary life. It's good that a dog has a hut, has a doghouse, and has a plate with meat and a bone, but for us it's not enough. My animalistic body could be set really well, but when the human part in me is awakening, I have to give it some kind of an answer, some kind of a satisfaction. Otherwise, I don't care about anything. And then the different anarchistic movements started to awaken again around the world. And things like in Cuba, in South America, and everywhere. So in Europe, there was the Cultural Revolution. In South America, the revolution in terms of movements with Che Guevara and others, and in different places, differently. Also in Africa, they started to get back on their feet, and the Europeans said, okay, we're leaving you alone, and they left Africa in the 60s. It was really so. And Africa got rid of the rule of England and France. And it was really felt. These were really burning years. very vital years. And I was exactly a student. Till the 70s, I was a student. From 1963-64 until 1970. I finished the university in 1970. And then also developed a movement of the people that are like from the Club of Rome, the people that are on the top of the world, that they started thinking, how should the world look like? What should it look like? Philosophers, and I think the head of Fiat was there, meaning powerful people, people that understand, very rich people, and along with them scientists. And this club already spoke about the revolution in the world, that the world has to reach a new state. And they wrote about it, they publicized it, they had the abilities to do what they want. And they were in the headlines, and people looked at them. But pretty quickly it quenched, because there was no real plan. The fact that there are smart people that discover different phenomena, that's one thing. Beside the phenomena, we also have to know the reason for the phenomena. And that's something which is hidden from people. Phenomenon, I can check according to different instruments, I can see it maybe. I have economists, I have scientists, doctors, different people, politicians, philosophers. I can identify phenomena. But when we reach to the reason for phenomena, it's hidden. And then we don't know what it is. What could actually cause the situation? The situation is very clear. We could commentate it one direction or another, but a fact is a fact. And therefore, the problem are not the facts, because dealing with facts, it's a lost case. We will never reach healment. The healment can come only if we delve down to the reason, and it's always hidden inside, beneath the surface. And if we take care of the reason, then we can really rooted out that unpleasant phenomena or even threatening phenomena. And the Club of Rome and all of these big circles disappeared accordingly, because they couldn't understand the reason for what. The reason for what's happening. Where's the world headed? That we're discovering that the world's integral, and that all the people, all the countries, all the nations are becoming more interconnected, and they're influencing each other. Although a person on the street, he doesn't see it, because he can't see that far. So widely, but the people, they wrote nice articles about what's going on. But what do I have as a result of the world being interconnected, becoming as one system? All the more that humanity is influencing the still vegetative inanimate nature, meaning all of Earth, and that's atmosphere and everything. And what, as a result, how can we reach a state where we influence it? Because there starts the pollution, air pollution, the pollution of nature, and industry became very aggressive. And so what we had was trade and these big shopping malls and the tree clearing and tourists all over, and the world became one. But along with that, we're not moving. The countries are locked together even more. And also the cultures, even though they want to do something about it, but there is a kind of a beginning of a collision. between the general tendency of the human development with all of nature, that there is a clear tendency, that whether there is a clear inclination, whether we want it or not, it's an evolutional inclination that we are becoming more and more as one, but that we feel all of us, all of humanity in one room. Along with it, this also brings us to a great fear, because we start feeling who's ruling and who do I have to kill first, otherwise they'll kill me, and so on. Meaning suddenly we started feeling that we are under great pressure. And this is how it unfolded till the 90s, more or less, till Russia fell, this whole empire. And then people thought that now there's going to be something new, something else. And for about 10, 15 years, there was kind of a relief that the world can be more similar, we can all be as one, instead of two empires which are counter to each other. And afterwards, again, the ego started working, and so on, and so forth. What I want to say is that this direction gave us also, along with everything else, a clear understanding of what's going on with the attitude towards the people of Israel, because throughout history, whenever the world was well off, the attitude towards the people of Israel, even though there was no country back then, and when there was no country, they helped them form a country. Who could dream today that someone would do something like that? It's irrational. Most of the countries voted in favor. And America and Russia and Europe and many other countries in the world were in favor. When the world is well off, Israel is well off. When the world feels bad, so do Israel. In terms of the attitude towards Jews, anti-Semitism, it's always there. The only question is it on the surface or not? And we have to learn from this, that when the world feels bad, for sure they will blame Israel. Why? That's the question. But the question is, clear. This always happens. Why does it happen? Like they claim, and I see it here in the caricatures that you brought from Le Monde, or it's from the Instagram, from social networks. It's from a caricature from, I don't know, but this is from France, and this is from, I think, okay, this is in French and this in English. So why does it happen this way? Because really, as they claim, Israel is standing behind all of these things. This is on the surface and this below surface. This is ISIS. And this is behind ISIS. Meaning that all these things are controlled by Jews. Jews, they control the world. They control the governments. The money of the world is in their pockets. When they need, they create wars. When they want, they're creating some kind of a world crisis or something else. And this is how they control the world from both sides. Here we have the Rothschilds, here we have the Rockefellers. In short, it's all in the hands of Jews. And therefore, we have no other source for the world's evil, but there's just one source, Israel, the Jews. And what's interesting about this nation is that the truth is that each one of them knows it and understands it, and they're silent about it, and this is how they control the world quietly. Who are they? The Jews. Meaning the Jews know that they rule the world. Yeah, the Jews, they're all silent about it. They're arranging everything. This is what they think about us. Each and every Jew in the world knows that someplace there is some kind of a mechanism, Jewish mechanism, that are cooking the future of humanity. And accordingly, the world's behaving. Behind the scenes, they're moving, yes. Therefore, all of the poor, weak nations of the world, they don't even know who's controlling them, but this is how it's happening. And therefore, the Jews are responsible for all of the problems in the world, and if there is a relief coming to the world, it's because in the meantime they decide, not that it's no longer under their control, but in the meantime they decide that they can allow everyone, give them a kind of a break, and only. And this is what everyone in the world thinks. It's not that it's some special kind of media or the characters, those that make the caricature. But everyone in the world thinks so, so much that in countries where they didn't even hear about Israel, and they don't know what a Jew looks like suppose Korea, they are even greater anti-Semites than the European countries, that there it's a historical phenomenon. So why? Because the people of Israel, and not only the people of Israel, not the country of Israel, but the people of Israel in general, are to blame for all of the problems in the world, as it says in the book of Zohar, that only through the behavior of the people of Israel, by the behavior of the people of Israel, the entire situation of the world is determined. And Israel, because they're not uniting, by that they block the good force from revealing in the world. Again, by not being united as one man and one heart, and love thy friend as thyself, as it says in their Torah, by that they cause all the problems in the world, because by not being connected, they become as a cork in the way of the good force that cannot reveal in our world. In our world, there is only the bad force, which is the force of the human ego, the evil force. And the good force is not revealed in our world. It has to be revealed. And it can be revealed only through the Israeli nation. And only. Which has to unite. And according to the connection, the intensity of the connection, this force will reveal in the world through them. And if they're not connected, if they're in unfounded hatred, and this is something that's going on for the past 2,000 years since the destruction of the temple, then the whole world hates them, because subconsciously the world feels, instinctively, not even knowing why, feel that they're to blame for all the problems of each and every person in particular and in general. And it won't stop, ever, as the Book of Zohar says, and the wisdom of Kabbalah in general, until we unite, like the Torah demands us to do, being one man and one heart, and brotherly love, and love thy friend as thyself, and then through us, the good force will reveal in the world, and it will balance the evil force, and the world will come to harmony and balance, and then everyone will enjoy it, and then instead of hatred towards Jews, everyone will acknowledge the virtue of the people of Israel and will respect them. Therefore, the fact that there are some problems in the world, the Jews are to blame for it for sure. The fact that immediately they label us with these caricatures, natural. This is the way of the world. They're not to blame. They have no free choice about it. I, meaning the people of Israel, am the only one, we, as a result of our lack of connection, are evoking these actions that we see, these calamities, and also everyone's response that come due to the problems that have nothing to do with us, but it's aimed at us. They have no free choice, the nations of the world, but they do have this instinctive feeling, and they're right. They themselves say about it, the whole world thinks that. And also, all of the sages, those that wrote the Torah, they say so too. And this is how it comes to us from the Creator. Whether you want it or not, this is how the world's organized. Enough being stubborn people. We have to understand this phenomena. And you ask to know the reason. This is the reason. Now, of course, we can learn a lot about it. Why is it arranged this way? Where do we come from? What is the United People of Israel? Why do we determine the future of the world and our connection? Only this is the solution. And the rest, go study. We'll go and study probably on our next talk because our time is up for today's talk. Thank you very much, Rav Lightman. Thank you, Nitza. Thanks for being with us. We're inviting you to join us on the next show. We'll talk about it. Thanks and all the best.